Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
In android form, a human being can have practical immortality. Can you understand what I'm offering mankind?
Programming. Different word. But the same old promises made by Genghis Khan, Julius Caesar, Hitler, Ferris, Malthus.
Can you understand that a human converted to an android can be programmed for the better? Can you imagine how life could be improved if we could do away with jealousy, greed, hate?
It can also be improved by eliminating love, tenderness, sentiment. The other side of the coin, Doctor.
No one need ever die again. No disease, no deformities, or even fear can be programmed away and replaced with joy. I'm offering you a practical heaven, a new paradise, and all I need is your help.
Meat, blood, and bones.
Those are things that people have.
Meat, blood.
Blood.
And bones.
Those are things that people have. That's what the little girls
that's are right.
made of.
That's right. That's the answer to the question.
Not androids.
That's the answer to the question this episode is apparently asking.
Is this title supposed to be like, you know, a riff on something else?
Well, it's a poem, right? Oh. There's a poem. Girls are made of sugar and spice and everything nice, and boys are made of snips and snails
and puppy dogs' tails.
Of all, I don't think that thing is actually named What Are Little Girls Made Of. I don't think this is based on that.
I think it is from that
poem.
What do you think it's based on?
It's a
nursery rhyme.
And I think the snips and snails and puppy dogs' tails is from Calvin and Hobbes. I think they
I think they reference it. I don't think it was made up in Calvin and Hobbes. I think the poem is actually what little boys are made of, and what little girls are made of is the second one.
Well,
it's a similar vein of literature to that, you know, that whole business with the girls go to college to get more knowledge and boys go to Jupiter to get more stupider.
Right.
You know that
Jack
sort
and Jill went up the hill.
Part of
I told you that one.
I know you did. And I'm trying to connect with
you. Didn't
you
make it up?
Well, I didn't make it up.
Oh,
no. So I was babysitting and some kid was like saying that to me.
Oh, shit.
It is wise. It is wise advice. Blood and bones.
Yep. That's what they're made of.
Okay, let's get started here. This is the It's Got Star Trek podcast. That is
frequency open, Mr. Spock.
That is where you have found yourselves.
Which
if you were
number is it?
Listening to us. Oh, good question, Jesse. It is episode number 260.
Steady as we go, Helm.
260.
260.
I'm gonna take note for further
write
reference.
That down in your notes there, and then you've got it for the future. Yeah.
Wait, we're at 260?
We're at 260. That's
I
not counting
bonus
episodes.
No, we're at like 270.
No, we're at 260.
No, we're at like 270.
I don't believe 270. 260 is much more believable.
No. Now, if you're counting our various bonus episodes, then we might be closer to 270
maybe,
in terms of episodes produced. That's episodes of It's Not Star Trek. That's
not quite yet.
So you're saying
follow-up episodes.
It's not 270?
General topic.
Are you sure it's not 270?
It's not 270.
Then prove it.
It's not. I don't know. Go to the website. Look at the podcast feed. You can load up. You got a computer there. You got two computers.
Two computers and a phone.
You can load up
keep
the podcast
trying.
Feed. You'll see that last week's
there's
episode.
There's a computer over here you could use.
It's 259. You might be getting
I'm
confused.
I'm asking you guys the question.
Look, you might be getting confused because of all the excellent Patreon content that we've been producing, which does not count in this count.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
That's extra stuff.
To get to the Patreon content, you have to go to patreon.com/itsgotstartrek. And then you can see the Patreon content. More practically, you can hear it.
Mm-hmm.
You can load it into your, you can pay for it and load it into your podcast player if you like.
I don't think there's anything to see yet.
Well, I mean, there's text.
Text.
There's text.
Oh.
And a logo.
Hilarious text.
Yeah. Anyway, yes.
I do not understand.
Yeah. Well, that all worked out. Okay, Patreon number 260. It's got Star Trek. Welcome.
Welcome.
In case I didn't welcome you before, we do have to welcome you.
Hello.
Welcome you.
As the advertisement, as the title in the podcast player states, this week we will be discussing the Star Trek TOS classic episode. I think it's fair to call it a classic. I hope I'm not being presumptuous in referring to this as a classic. What are little girls made of?
How convenient.
Okay.
Bit of a non-sequitur. They're made out of robot bits.
They're made of meat, blood, and bones. Yes, that's what we're going to be talking about.
Did you really call this a classic?
He just did.
Yeah. You don't think it's a classic?
You don't remember hearing that?
There you go, audience. We've already set it up for you. There's going to be some contention. There's going to be some mild contention this episode once we get to that conversation. But first, we already mentioned the Patreon / It's Got Star Trek. Check it out. I did want to mention that we will have a second break quiz 'em up. I will ask Jesse and Dan some questions are tangentially related to this episode. Now,
ask away.
We did not receive any reviews, so that means there are no haikus. Mm. We continue to be unable to produce haikus for use because there's no new reviews.
Maybe, fine, Mr. Spock.
Maybe there can be a haiku about how there are no reviews.
Yeah.
You're just trying to find work.
You still just
trying to find work for me to do? Is that what you're doing?
Trying to keep you busy.
Why don't you write a haiku?
I thought you were just, it just came out of you like water.
Why don't you write a limerick about not having any haikus to write?
Limerick. That's what I can do.
Yeah. Actually, that could be fun. Jesse's limericks. All right. But if you do want to send, write a review, that you can do that. That'd be fun.
Write a review. It's cool. Write a review from me to you. Write a review. It's cool. Write a review from me to you.
If you want to send us an email, or you can do that at feedback@starstrek.com. That's the other thing.
Sing that song.
Yeah. I think that's the main stuff. We can talk about the episode.
All right.
We can get right into it.
Is everything all right?
I'm trying to be swifter about things. Just jump right in.
It's all right now.
I did want to mention.
Everything's all right now.
Everything's all right now.
Everything is all right now.
The Purple Cave? First I wanted to mention that Open Pike Night, they discussed this episode a month or two ago. Rock. Go check it out. That was a very good conversation. But this is a fun episode. I guess. All right. I will make clear. This is Patrick talking. I am speaking from my own subjective perspective. It sounds like Dan is champing at the bit, as they say, to provide his own opinion here. Mm. Okay, Dan, you're not into this episode? Into or not into this episode?
I just thought it was kind of boring, slow moving, boring. Oh. There was a lot of stuff that didn't make sense about the androids. Okay, so I guess the Kirk, the Robo Kirk, and the Robo Corby, they were supposed to be more advanced than Ruk and Andrea, or are they supposed to, like Ruk and Andrea were they like version one? Because Ruk and Andrea based on real people, just like Robo Kirk was based on regular Kirk.
I don't know.
That was not. That was confusing.
And his name was Ruk, and
not
Rock.
Not clear.
Right?
I think I've been saying Ruk.
I didn't know. I heard Ruk, but
no, it's Ruk.
Ruk. Ruk.
Ruk.
That does sound like Ruk. But what does it say in the transcript? Because we are
in the transcript.
We're dealing with the
in transcript
Canadian.
In transcript and Chakotea, and I bet you it's in Memory Chakotea. Alpha too. It's Ruk.
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 I believe
with a U. Ruk.
That sounds more alien than Ruk.
Yeah, it's in Memory Alpha too. It's R-U-K, Ruk, who also played Lurch in the Addams Family.
Right.
Getting all these weird names like Ruk and Lurk. They did a good job of beefing him up because sometimes...
Oh, yeah. He looked mega.
Yeah, because sometimes...
He was wearing like a pillow or something.
Yeah, he was wearing some pillow hoodie thing. But a lot of times when they beef people up in shows, it always looks kind of cheesy, even when they do it well. But I think because he's so tall, it was like kind of more
believable. The proportions
believable.
Worked out, I think.
Plus, I liked his movement. His movements are great when he was when he was,
lurking?
He was hunkering.
He was hunkering. A few times
and he had his hands up like he was the reptile the Mortal Kombat character Reptile, and he was like going like
I wish the audience could see your little reptile
just
dance.
Just think of Reptile in Mortal Kombat
and Dan
Mortal Kombat. Mm-hmm. So the slow pacing was one issue for you. I was quite enjoying the slow pacing. I mean, because I didn't find it to be slow.
The beginning when they were...
I didn't think it was slow.
There's some like slow episodes of old Star Trek, old TV.
Well, the beginning when they were walking through the cave, that lasted about a minute and a half of them just like walking through the cave.
I kind of enjoyed
it.
Like, yeah, they're showing how much cave there is. I was like, man.
That was extensive cave.
I like when that guy fell.
He fell a long way.
And when I will
it
say
was
when,
bottomless.
When I first saw Ruk after that, I get well, the assumption is he pushed him off. Well, that's not even an assumption. But like when I first saw Ruk, I was like, "Holy shit, that's pretty cool! Like it looks cool." But there were little things like remember when real Kirk like said that shit about Spock. It was
the half breed business.
Yeah, it was some kind of it was this?
Androids don't eat, Miss Chapman.
No, sorry. No, it's this one. That was creepy.
Mind your own business, Mr. Spock. I'm sick of your half-breed interference. Do you hear?
So the premise of that was that regular Kirk said that sentence aloud to plant that thought into his head so it would copy itself over to RoboKirk, so RoboKirk would then have it in his memory banks. But wouldn't
Spock would be like, what the fuck is wrong with
right, exactly. But wouldn't RoboKirk remember...
You're being very un-Kirk.
Wouldn't RoboKirk remember that regular Kirk was thinking in his head, I'm going to try to trick myself into saying this? Aren't these things
maybe.
Supposed...
Yeah, maybe.
Aren't these things supposed to be exact replicas? Like it seems like they're pretty good replicas, except for these like glaring sort of mistakes. Like this one, like he was able to trick himself by saying a sentence once.
What's an exact replica?
And like he remembers the sentence, but not the fact that he was like convincing himself to think of it.
To be fair, Corby did say that this was a half copy. It wasn't,
full
Corby, copy.
Dude.
Well, yes, because Corby, right? Corby, we understand it's inferred at the end. Implied? Inferred? We infer from the implication that Corby did the full transfer. Because remember, Corby describes there being sort of a half transfer, which is like a copy, and then a full transfer where you move.
He had to survive.
Now, they didn't really examine that in depth.
Yeah, so
to be clear,
so but
I'm guessing you could argue that the Kirk didn't have literally every single memory because it wasn't like the full transfer.
He wasn't. I thought the only did he? I don't remember him making that specification.
He made the specification. However, he did not provide any explanation or anything behind it. So it sort of doesn't make sense. It's like saying, "Well, we can copy you, or we can move your brain into the other body."
And they were just like spinning around on like some kind of
wobbly ass table. Did you see how it was wobbly? I was getting a little nervous.
No,
it was pretty wobbly.
It was pretty fast. I was very impressed with the. With the cinematography of this episode, overhead shot.
One thing, what you were talking about, Patrick, about him moving, what I got from it is Corby was talking about transferring human consciousness to an android versus not doing that. I didn't know that there was a halfway in between one.
He described Kirk, or the copy of Kirk. He referred to it as like a half step or something. Mm. He said half something.
Oh, yeah, he did say half
It was some variation on that.
Okay.
I don't know.
They probably saw Kirk's... Wing Wang.
Definitely.
That was their goal all along.
We got to see Shatner's nipples.
Yeah.
And a bit of trivia that I learned on the old Memory Alpha was that Sherry Jackson, who played Andrea, in a television interview at one point, I think she said that Shatner had to shave his chest for this scene. And I was like, I read that and I was like, no shit.
I will kiss you.
No.
Andrea, she was wearing some kind of Oshkosh bagosh, except like normally straps hold your. Okay, I'm sorry. I'll describe what that is. They're like overalls. You know?
Overalls, yes, for our international audience.
Except instead of having straps that held up her pants, her straps acted like her top. That was all. They weren't holding her pants up. They were just like
everybody
covering
had
her up.
A variation on the same sort of goofy jumpsuit, but hers was all like. You know, well, '60s kind of.
William Ware Thies. He was the main costume designer for Star Trek for TOS, and he designed this outfit for Andrea. Apparently, commenting at some point something along the lines of, "I've designed it to accent the natural contours of her body."
Oh man!
It's like, yeah, you did. You definitely.
Rock! No.
It really is wild how sexualized this outfit is for the time period.
Yeah, very much so. There was the whole scene between Corby and Chapel where he's like, you think I could love a machine? She's like, did you? And then he says, Andrea is incapable of that. Right. She simply obeys orders. She has no meaning for me. There's no emotional bond. Chapel didn't ask if Andrea formed an emotional bond with Kirk.
She asked if he was a sex robot.
Yeah, and he
was avoiding.
He says
she's a robot.
He says she simply obeys orders. So if she is anything, like based upon what she was wearing and what she was saying, what she was doing,
he's like, I just ordered her to give me hand jobs all the time.
But he's like trying
all the time.
He's like saying, no, we're not having sex. She can't have emotions.
It doesn't count as sex if it's a robot. if it's a hot robot.
If there's no emotions involved, you know,
it's just hand jobs.
There's so much in this episode that is brought up but not examined.
Yeah,
and that is one of the things, this mechanical geisha concept that Nurse Chapel mentions.
Well, let's see. At the beginning explanation, Dr. Brown. You remember Dr. Brown?
Yes, Dr. Brown.
He's dead. I assure you.
He seems totally not concerned at all with his guy being dead. But this is how he described how this culture came about. The culture of XO3 proved his theory. When they moved from light to darkness, they replaced freedom with a mechanistic culture. Dr. Corby has been able to uncover elements of this culture which will revolutionize the universe when freed from this cavernous environment. Like, it all sounds very fancy and thought out, but it doesn't really...
Right.
Like, why did they become more mechanistic? Like Patrick said, I guess...
What does that mean?
Yeah, like Patrick said, they don't really... Maybe
it's not explored.
It's not explored. Yeah. It sounded cool, but it didn't really tell you anything.
Let's go through.
I guess all it did was sort of get you prepared that there's something machine like going on. That's about it. But they managed to make the floors all smooth and nice wiring, but they didn't flatten out those walls. They still had rocky cave walls.
Yeah.
And they still had stalactites and stalagmites.
That's hard to do.
Do you know the difference between the stalactite and a stalagmite? Either of you?
Yes. Stalactites are from the ceiling.
Right.
And stalagmites are from the ground.
But do you know what it's called when a stalactite and a stalagmite connect?
Oh, I forget.
Yeah, it's called a cave.
No. That's when many of these things connect. It's a column.
Ah, column. That makes sense. And that's actually sort of reasonable.
Remember that game on Sega Genesis, Columns?
No, but I remember Altered Beast.
That's about
that
all
game
I remember.
Kinda sucked.
Yeah, no, Altered Beast is a miserable game.
Weird.
It's all still fun.
Wise from your ways.
The whole game is based around those few seconds you get to be the beast, but then the rest of it is you being this piece of shit and like trying to get back to the cool party.
It's not well programmed. Anyway,
so
what I was trying to say is we should briefly list what are some of the concepts that are brought up in this episode in an interesting way, but then not explored. One of them is the concept of transferring a human consciousness.
Right.
Another is copying a human consciousness. We've already demonstrated some confusion there.
Well,
and then you were just mentioning there's the can a robot love is another one,
which somehow leave it to Kirk to be able to make an android fall in love, because that's basically what he did at the end, right?
She went haywire.
He made her emotionally confused, which is kind of
by
fucked
kissing
up.
Her.
Yeah, he kissed her and she got emotionally confused, and then she had a breakdown. And when you think about that, that's pretty fucked up, right?
Yeah,
but he gave an android.
He has a way.
He gave androids emotion. Kirk's love causes a singularity.
Yeah. Although he didn't love her.
Well, I mean, Kirk's his mojo. I'll say his mojo.
His mojo. But yeah, well, okay, we can name, there's some other things we can probably name.
But a little on the subject of transferring versus moving, transferring versus copying.
Yeah.
They were talking about transferring, to me, in the show, they were talking about transferring consciousness, but then Kirk responded with, oh, it's all just programming, which was actually,
thing to consider.
Yeah, it is. But those are two different things. Like, programming would be copying, but Corby was asserting that there was some consciousness being transferred. The popular thing they seem to do nowadays is to say you don't transfer consciousness, you upload it, which makes an exact copy of it, you know? So I can think of at least
two of you motherfuckers running
I can at least think of at least two shows or movies that have that that
is one of them the show Upload?
Two.
No.
Have you seen the show Upload?
Yeah, I do. I did. It's great. It's a really good show.
I haven't seen it.
I liked it. It's kind of cheesy, but I like it. I enjoy it.
All right.
I think
it's better or worse than Time Tracks?
I've never seen Time Tracks.
Just based on what you know about Time Tracks.
I think Upload's more about transferring, but the popular thing people do a lot is talk about is copying, but I think Upload's about transferring, not copying.
It's got his own mojo going.
Yeah, so
just like Kirk.
Corby was saying transfer Kirk, yeah. What Kirk, well, was, well, Kirk wasn't,
Corby was saying both.
Kirk was implying copying.
Corby was saying both. He was suggesting he could do both.
Oh yeah. Well, I'll have to reread that part to.
What about the food that they were eating? That was.
There was some kind of stew.
Space kibbles.
There was some gross. Yeah, some stew with some kind of like
fruit on it.
Red, bright green, like, and
fruit stew.
It looked like clay or avocado clay or something.
Protein chunks.
Protein chunks.
Yeah, I love them protein chunks.
Oh man, dude, I'm sorry, for some reason I started thinking about Kirk's Starfleet shirt. It's so tight and so short that it gives me anxiety. Like, I think like you're gonna bend over and everyone's gonna see your butt crack, but like that doesn't happen to Kirk. Like, they should make it longer. It was so short.
Well, we've watched a few season one episodes of TOS in the not too distant past, and
the not too distant past.
It seems to be a pretty frequent occurrence, at least early on, that Shatner's taking his shirt off.
Yeah, yeah.
Or taking his whole clothes off.
His whole clothes.
And being all sheepish about it. Like today, when he's, you know, spinning around, then we get to see two of them acting all charming, lurking about.
Do you realize that we're like, you know, almost 20 minutes in, and we've been talking about this episode for almost 20 minutes? Like, usually we would have just started to get going on the episode talk. We jumped right into it.
Very interesting.
Yeah, no, we did a good job.
You think that's a good thing?
What? Do you think it's not a good thing?
Well, we didn't have any witty banter like before.
Well, there's time. We can fuck around.
I mean, what the fuck does the audience want? They can either get to...
what do you guys want from us?
And get to the conversation, or they can have some witty banter about some bullshit.
You bring disorder here.
We can always mix in the witty banter in the middle of the podcast, too.
You bring the evil back.
I really enjoyed... Something Cassidy. What's that guy's name? His name is
Ted Cassidy. Ted Cassidy, who played Lurch in the Addams Family.
Are you sure it's Ted Cassidy?
I believe it is Ted Cassidy.
Ted Cassidy.
Why don't you look it up?
Look it up?
No, because you're asking. I don't know why you're asking me.
I don't know what you're asking. It's Ted Cassidy.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
That's what I was saying all along.
All right. You were going to make a point about Ted Cassidy. You said you liked something that Ted Cassidy said.
You and Ted Cassidy, dude. Jeez.
I'm wondering how long this idea of like this Android talk they've had. There was some like cool Android talk, of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure there's sci-fi books that are older, much older than this episode that have talked about the very same thing. But the way that...
Well, it goes back to even the Golem of...
right, but
which there's a bit of Golemish, and I don't mean Lord of the Rings Golem. I mean like Jewish tradition Golem, a clay creature, demon that's infused with a demon.
I'm talking more about the modern sort of take on it where like it's computer programming and then like it's like this is what computers will do for us one day, because this is back when we were like trying to imagine the future of computers. And it's amazing when you see things like this that so accurately predict kind of what is happening, sort of.
Isn't a robot a Czech term? I think it comes from a short story. Could have that wrong, but I have a vague recollection.
No.
There's a short story
that
involves an android that they call a robot.
Wow.
But I don't know. Don't look it up. If you don't look it up, then I'm never wrong. That's my philosophy, right?
Why are you unhappy?
Now, a question for you. One of the philosophical questions that we can pose to both of you. And I don't know. Maybe I'll provide an answer.
Like,
why
they don't do like many like planet or large objects zooming in and zooming out like they used to? Like in this episode, when the ship goes by the planet, you see the planet zoom in, and when they leave in the rear view mirror,
the rear view mirror.
The planet.
Sulu's like adjusting.
The planet. You see the planet.
Every mirror is getting into a space suit.
You see the planet zoom out, and there was an episode of TOS where they found this big giant like Oh, the one with Tranya, that Tranya episode, when that big giant ship like zoomed in on him, it looked awesome. Yeah,
with Clint Howard.
They don't do a lot of those zoomy
Corbomite maneuver.
They don't do a lot of those zooming of like a celestial or just generally large objects anymore. Maybe it's just a cheesy look. I want them to zoom more. We don't see a lot of zooming. We see ships flying, but we don't see planets zooming in on them anymore.
All right. True. No, I think that's great.
That's what you were going to talk about, right?
No. What I was going to ask is, in your view, is getting rid of death and pain worth losing out on love and joy? Or is this a simplistic scenario? But I did like your little...
Don't ask me to make that choice.
Your little rant about, about zooming. Not enough zooming. in this episode.
Well, this episode had a good zooming.
Oh, this episode had good zooming, and they don't do enough.
They don't do it anymore.
I get you. I was going to say, I agree. I really like the...
Because in this episode, they zoomed it. They zoomed it.
I like the close-ups of the ships and all that. That was cool.
Yeah, well, they've done close-ups of ships from now until forever, but I'm talking about the
beginning. Yeah, this was a little different.
No, at the beginning...
Like super close up.
At the beginning of this episode, they zoomed into the planet, and at the end of the episode, they zoomed away from the planet, and you saw them both, and they even saw the planet rotate when they were sitting by it. You could see it rotate, zoom in, zoom
when
out.
When they were in orbit around it?
When orbit. I think it was rotating a little fast, but you don't usually see that shit too
much
nowadays.
They were pretty close shots of the Enterprise that you don't always see.
That's, yeah. There was some framing
from like underneath of it.
It was interesting.
But what was the real point we were talking about again?
Okay. What I was asking was, one of the philosophical questions posed by this episode is whether or not getting rid of death and pain is worth losing out on love and joy, or is this a simplistic presentation of this scenario?
Well,
which is kind of implied by what Kirk suggests at the end, because Corby keeps insisting that these people do not have emotions, and they don't feel joy.
Well, here's a thing that goes along with your point. Kirk's at one point says, is it possible they built their machines too well, gave them pride and a desire to survive, machines that wanted logic and order and found that frustrated by the illogical, emotional creatures that built them? Right here, he's making a demarcation between pride and emotion. And I would argue that pride is an emotion.
Yeah, that's pride fucking with you.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's a Pulp Fiction reference.
Yeah, right. Now,
fuck pride.
Now, survival is kind of...
Marcellus Wallace.
Survival is like logical, emotional, instinctual. It's like everything, but like pride is an emotional thing. So I think that's another weird thing about the episode. You're talking about how they're making things simplistic. I think this is a weirdly simplistic, like categorical sort of like way to compartmentalize look of emotions. Yeah. They said all of emotions, and they separated pride out as something separate than emotions, which didn't make any sense to me, because it is. But then I'm reminded of when you're talking about what you're now talking about now, I'm reminded of how you were saying that you didn't like the part in that TOS episode where the enemy within.
The enemy within,
because that was too simplistic about the idea of splitting. It's like, this is the assertive side. They're a dick, but they're like good at being assertive. This is like the nice side, but they're kind of wimpy, but they're nice. And in the end, they're the bravest, you know? It's like
case, they were making a clearer point about what the perspective of the writers was, in that they were asserting that this violent, fucked up nature is just part of a personality. And I was arguing that one of the problem is not even necessarily the binary, because you can use a binary in order to make some sort of point, you know, it's using the structure of myth to illustrate some point about humanity. It's just, in this case, I disagreed with the point. I think it was a dangerous point, and so that was problematic. Whereas
I thought you also had a problem with like the simplicity with which they separated. You were calling it pop science, that part where they were like splitting the different emotions, like as if they were separate.
So yeah, that was part of it, but really it was also just I disagreed with the overall point. Whereas in this case, it was more about they just didn't go into it. They didn't seem to really take a position, or not a clear position, on any of the philosophical questions they posed. And they sort of contradicted them in a little ways, because there's robots and then there's full transfers, and Corby, as a full transfer, assumed that he still retained all his emotions and creativity, et cetera. But at the end of the episode, they seemed to imply that he was having trouble. He started talking all robot style, like calculate, blah, 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 that sort of thing. But then they were saying,
you might as well try to outthink a calculating machine.
Saying that the copies or robots like Andrea couldn't have emotions, but then Kirk kissed her really hard.
Aggressively,
arguably violated her. And then caused her to have an emotion because, I don't know, because he was so traumatic that she was sexually assaulted by somebody that she had an emotional... I don't know what the implication was. But the point is that it's a sort of haphazard and contradictory.
When I was talking earlier about how some of the Android stuff I felt was a little inconsistent was, Andrea's supposed to be this, like, super smart robot replica person thing, right? But on the one hand, at one point, she claims that she's not programmed for alarms.
Yeah.
Like,
I didn't know what that meant.
Yeah, either. I mean, she's not...
Did you have any idea what that meant, Jesse?
No.
Like, aren't you supposed to, like, if you're an intelligent being, you figure stuff out. You're not, like, programmed for certain...
Well,
I mean,
depends,
to a degree...
you're programmed doing that
shit. I mean, you could say, like, the reason I'm not good at this game is not, I'm not programmed for it. I need to practice that game, therefore programming myself to be part of it. I mean, I guess you could word it like that. So maybe that's what she went when she was like, I am not programmed for alarms.
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 It's like she wasn't talking like a robot.
Alarms.
I am not programmed for alarms.
She sounds perfectly normal. Now, I must point out, since we are coming up on a break, that you still have not answered the question, unless you're arguing that it is a simplistic and it's a, if it's an unanswerable question.
Yeah, no, I do think it's simplistic. It's, I think what I'm trying to say is, yeah, like the fact that they separated pride from emotion is just a weird choice, but it's very much trying to simplify like complicated emotions. And
what about you, Jesse? Would you like to live forever without pain?
Oh, you're asking me that question?
Without pain, if it meant you could neither feel love nor joy?
I mean, it just like,
Jesse's thinking about
it. Can I still play video games?
Yes, but you'll feel no joy nor love for the video games.
Then, yeah, there's no point in that if I can't enjoy like video games or something, you know?
All right.
I mean, I understand posing that question, but, you know, it's like, it's not, you know, it's...
It's not a real question.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's...
Patrick, what's your answer?
No, I'm not going to...
Oh, come on.
Not that I'm not going to answer. I'm not going to be like a joyless robot.
So you want to die? Should we be worried about you?
No. I'm not suggesting I want to die. I'm suggesting that
you're not human.
From what limited understanding I have about life, the universe, and everything at this stage in my life, I would probably prefer not being a joyless robot. But I don't know for sure. What I do know for sure is that it is way past time we take a break.
Oh, no.
So we're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, we will continue to discuss this episode and have a second break quiz-em-up, in fact.
Oh, boy.
We'll be right back.
Enterprise out.
All right.
All right, Dan's all
right. He's all right, Dan's.
Okay, that means we're back.
Dan's all right.
We are back. We have returned from the break.
This podcast is all right.
Oh, I knew I'd find you.
Dan did a little dance.
I did a little dance.
Everything you've done has proved it isn't you.
It was a good break. Dan did a little dance.
Everything you've done has proved it isn't you.
Bringing us back from break dance.
Everything you've done has proved it isn't you.
Kirk out.
Jesse had some Austrian schnapps.
Everything you've done has proved it isn't you.
Kirk out.
Everything you've done has proved it isn't you.
Kirk out.
Everything you've done has proved it isn't you.
Kirk out.
Everything you've done has proved it isn't you.
All right.
I wanted another inconsistency, by the way, but with Andrea, right before we get to the game, is that whole slapping and kissing thing.
Yeah.
Like, I understand the first time because Corby was like, he was just showing off his moves.
He ordered her to kiss and then ordered her to slap. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. That's what I'm saying.
Did he just say what you were about to
say? Yes, he did.
That was not my intention. I was trying to be like, I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
The reference you're describing, I understand. I thought you're setting it up. You're setting up a point, and you were providing the context. I wanted to convey that I understand the context of the first interaction.
Okay.
And now I'm guessing where you're going to go
with
the conclusion,
right?
Because it is an interesting point you're making. And I'm glad you're doing it.
Yeah, I know you're doing it. I know you're doing it because you're into it.
And I'm going to leave you to it.
I know you're doing it because I know you have a good heart
I do.
I know you have a good heart
intentions
about it.
Intentions are strong and golden. Golden intentions.
Patrick's golden intentions.
Oh, gosh.
So he was showing off his power, and he's like, kiss Kirk. And it's like, I can make her go from kissing him to smacking him. And she did it, and it was like, oh, my God, by the way, that looked like a pretty real smack to me. That looked like a serious smack.
But power is always illustrated by someone just like, hey, do this. Now do this.
Yeah.
See, I have power.
So then later on in the episode...
Yes.
She went to kiss Kirk, and then she smacked him afterwards, sort of implying that that's what she thought people did, is you're supposed to smack them after kissing them.
Isn't that what you're supposed to do?
But, like, I mean, it depends on what you're into. But the point I'm making is, why did she smack him after kissing him? Is it because that's what she thought she was supposed to do? Isn't she, like, hundreds of years old? aren't the, this is another.
Well, no, she's relatively new.
This is
Corby made that guy.
I think she's newer. I think Corby made her.
Corby made her. Yeah.
I don't know if it's explicit because but I sort of got the impression.
I don't know. They just keep talking about these robots being so intelligent and just like humans, and they make all these glaringly really weird mistakes, like the Kirk planting.
Because she would look more like alien. Like, I totally interrupted you. But.
Yeah, like when with like something unrelated.
She would look like.
What I was saying is that I was talking about earlier how Kirk, you know, planted that Spock insult into his head, right? And he was, but like, so the Spock, Robo Kirk remembered that, but he didn't remember it getting planted. Just like for some reason, she was told to kiss someone and then smack him after that. She's intelligent, but she couldn't guess the, like, make out the context that you, under normal circumstances, you don't slap someone after you kiss them. The only reason they were doing it in that circumstance is because the guy was trying to prove a point about his power. But like, she didn't pick up on that. So I get confused. These androids every once in a while, they seem so fucking smart, and then every once in a while they do this weird fucking shit.
They're
that's
androids.
Like, it's a total plot device or some shit.
Well, also, I do believe that part of the point of the episode is to actually, be like not into the android. I think the episode is saying like androids are not a good idea.
Yeah, right. And
you can quibble with that point, but they're leaving some other points on the table. But that point I think exists.
And I take back the part about. For that particular one I was talking about, that was not a plot device. They were like her smacking after he kissed him. That was just done to like sort of make a point about androids, I guess.
They just wanted people to get slapped.
But they were so good in some other respects. That's the thing, is how can they have these just like so good in most situations that every once in a while they just shit the bed, you know, with something crazy.
It's implausible.
I mean, I know that you could say ChatGPT does the same thing, but I don't think it does it as like randomly as like.
Not these days.
When ChatGPT.
I think it's gotten better.
And when ChatGPT fucks up, it usually just mixes its facts up in a way that if you didn't know, you wouldn't have guessed that it fucked up.
And then it
up.
Apologizes profusely and gives you free coupons to Dunkin' Donuts.
Anyways,
weird. That's weird.
Anyways, yeah. I'm saying these androids, it was easy to point out their flaws, whereas something like ChatGPT, it could make a flaw and we might not notice it just because it's smooth about mixing the words. Anyway, you were talking about the
smooth.
Back also, you were talking earlier about like the binary nature of things. Kirk had a good
I'm just laughing because I was all like, I got all my notes.
Yeah, by the way.
I got my notes up for this quiz 'em up.
Okay, last thing.
I got all these. No, I mean, you know, this is good. I'm enjoying this conversation. It's just funny.
Fine,
he's
Mr.
ready
Spock.
To podcast.
So yeah, I know.
I'm bringing it to the table.
I'm doing a bad. Kirk goes, she killed the android, Corby, the same way you killed Ruck. Is this your perfect world? Your flawless beings killing off one another? Aren't you doing exactly what you hate most in humans?
Dun dun dun.
Killing with no more concern than when you turn off a light. I like that binary imagery of like turning off a light, sort of like, yeah, computers, ones and zeros, binary, on or off, yes or no. I thought that
that's all it is, baby.
I thought that line was pretty smooth. I like that line.
There's some good lines. I mean, unlike you, I was largely entertained by this episode. I do have my critiques. Like I said, I do think they bring up a lot of interesting points that they then don't explore. Yeah. But otherwise, I find it an entertaining and sort of intriguing story.
I don't necessarily like to always rate things as one better than the other,
sure.
But if I'm going to talk about what I enjoyed for the first watch through, I enjoyed Enemy Within more in my first watch through than this one.
I enjoyed that one as well. That's a fun episode. Mm-hmm.
Just because it's fun. Just Kirk, it's awesome to watch, you know, William Shatner like Kirk it around. Like,
yeah, he's Kirking
out.
He's Kirked out. This episode he didn't
Kirk
have to
out.
Kirk. He didn't have to Kirk out.
Kirk out, Kirk
too much
out.
This episode.
Everything you've done has proved it isn't you.
Kirk out, Kirk out, Kirk out.
Everything you've done has proved it isn't you.
Kirk out, Kirk out, Kirk out.
Everything you've done has proved it isn't
this,
you.
All right. This, there was no Scotty or McCoy.
Yeah. Or Sulu, I don't
or
think.
Sulu.
Yeah.
There was some Uhura. What did she say?
Yeah,
she said this. She said,
"Frequency open, Mr. Spock."
Oh, what was like? Did you see at the beginning when Chapel and was like leaving to go off the ship, and then like her and Uhura gave each other a hug and a kiss, and they like said something to each other? I want to know what they said to each other.
Oh, well,
they're buds.
They're buddies, and Uhura just witnessed Nurse Chapel regain apparent contact. With her fiance, who had been missing
right.
for 5 years.
But I bet you, like, when
I'm sure she knew the inside skinny on what was going on.
I bet you they said something to each other, like, in real life. Like, something like when they were talking. What do you
think
they actually
the
said?
The actors, Michelle Nichols.
And Majel Barrett. Yeah. I bet they said something. They were like, hey, what are you having for lunch later or something? I want to know what they actually said to each other.
I can tell that you want to know.
Yeah, it's
said,
like,
you're making that very clear.
Said, we're not getting paid as much as the other guys.
Yeah. No, for real. Yeah. It's fucked up.
Okay, now it's time for the game.
Oh, is it? That's great. Okay.
Dan says so.
So this
gotta
will
be for real.
This will be brief, but I thought it would be fun because
it will be boxers.
We were joking at the beginning of the episode. We're just goofing around, joking that the question that
it's
this
question.
Episode title poses, what are little girls made out of, is meat, blood, and bones. That was meant in jest, of course.
Yeah.
The other one is actually for real.
Though. But
that sugar and spice bit.
Yeah, the sugar and spice.
That's actually
nice.
Accurate. Yes.
I did want to check.
There are many things I don't understand.
I wanted to quiz you guys on what actually makes up a human. What ingredients do you need to make up a human in terms of elements?
Ingredients.
Elements.
Elements.
I don't know.
So this is not an intelligence test. This
elephants.
Is just a goofy quiz. Shout out some elements and let me know. What do you think?
Tungsten.
What do you think is a human's actually fucking made out of?
Guts.
Well, I mean, there's guts, but what are the guts made
carbon.
Out of?
And meat.
Carbon.
Carbon.
Carbon is one. Yes.
Bit of hydrogen.
Hydrogen's another one. Yeah.
Now, trust me.
Do you have a guess
oxygen.
As to how much hydrogen is in the body?
I honestly don't.
Well,
know.
There's a lot of water.
Well, right. Yeah. H2O.
And hydrogen is in water.
That's right.
So. I don't know exactly how much.
Well,
keep trying.
I'm not a scientist.
Apparently, it's about 10%.
10%.
Roughly. Although, in terms of atoms, it's 62% of the total number of atoms.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
That
when
is
they
nuts.
This was the equation.
62.
This listing has the percentages in both the percent of mass and the percent of atoms.
Whoa.
Which is kind of interesting because sometimes it's very different. You also mentioned oxygen. That's
oxygen.
65%.
Methane.
Hydrogen's 10%, carbon's 18%. What'd you say?
Methane.
In android form.
That's not
There's
listed.
A trace.
Listed among here in one of the main ones. How about you, Dan? You have any guesses? I would guess, except
they're nitrogen.
I'm looking at the list. Yep, nitrogen.
Skin mites.
There's about 3%.
Android form.
3% nitrogen. I don't know.
Doesn't everybody have like an isotope from the neutron bomb or the hydrogen bomb or something?
Yeah, but that would be an isotope of something.
That's an isotope of something.
What is something that makes up the bones?
Oh, calcium.
Yes, calcium.
Android form.
Calcium's
in the skeleton, teeth, and blood.
Yeah,
it's in your blood
skeleton.
Too. Calcium. Let's see how much calcium is there.
There's a bunch, dude.
It's a fair amount of calcium.
There's a lot of bones.
1.3%.
That
was the equation.
1.3%.
That bone was my bone.
All right, what else? We're almost done. That's most of the list. What else is there? Dan, any other guesses?
No.
There's like skin.
I honestly don't know.
You both have guessed skin. Dan guessed skin mites.
Hair.
I don't know.
Well, there's phosphorus.
Phosphorus.
Phosphorus. That's
where is that?
It's in your DNA, skeleton, and teeth.
Oh, okay.
Android form.
Sulfur.
Yeah.
You poop out some sulfur, you get the egg farts, get the egg burns.
It can also be improved by eliminating love.
Potassium, sodium is another one.
Sodium.
Chlorine and magnesium. Those are the others. They're all much smaller percentages than the others, but those are
the ones that make up vitamins.
Significant portion
yeah.
of the body.
In android
which
form.
Is interesting. But all of those together only account for about 97% of the mass of a regular ass human being.
Regular ass.
So
I got a regular ass.
For
only half of what I could have accomplished.
A bonus question is what makes up the remainder that is not yet accounted for.
Bullshit.
Well, I did have feces as one of the options.
Sometimes there's a lot. People have a lot of stuff stored
Please.
Up.
Don't ask me to make that choice.
It could be your soul. It could be engrams,
your soul.
Memory engrams. If you're a Scientologist,
he's as sane as you or I.
If you're into the old engram thing.
Engram.
I was listening to some podcast and they said something about the whole internet weighing like 51 grams.
Ooh.
Something like that.
From data? Because the amount of weight.
The amount of electrons you'd need to represent that data, I guess.
That's pretty neat that they figured that out.
Yeah. But you don't have a sound effect for it, do you?
For electrons? I don't know how I would respond to
that. How do they sound? Yeah. I don't know what that is.
Yeah. I remember hearing about some, like, this person was making an art project where they were going to print out all of Wikipedia and, like, make, like, a library, like, display, art display of, like, Wikipedia printed out. And there were some people.
The problem was they only had a dot matrix printer.
Like, they probably couldn't keep up with the amount of new data that's being added.
Yeah, they couldn't find a role.
Some people thought it was cool, and other people, like, was just like, there's no point to this at all, which I thought was like a weird response. I mean, I get what they're saying. It's like, yeah, it's ever changing.
But that's what art is.
It doesn't really mean anything to, like, print out something that's constantly changing. But yeah, it's art. So, like, I don't know. It was just kind of some kind of dry critic.
The book, there's two books. There's the book by the guy.
The good book.
The guy who made a series of books that's just. Okay, now I'm going to get there in a second. It's Google Plex.
Are you all right?
You know the number Google Plex?
I don't know.
Okay, so a Google is
one with like 100 zeros.
Yeah, Google is one with 100 zeros.
One with a Google zeros.
And right, Google Plex is one with a Google zero. And the problem with, you can't write out a Google Plex because there are there's more digits in a Google Plex than there are atoms in the entire universe. Right?
That's enough.
Anyway,
that's enough.
I learned about that on the television show QI. Which is short for quite interesting.
Well, there's more combinations that you can shuffle a 52 card deck than there are atoms in the solar system or something like that.
In the universe, I think. Or maybe.
I don't think it's a lot. It's more than you think.
It's a bunch.
It's more than you think.
It's a whole bunch.
It's mine.
Yes.
It's that.
Anyway.
That's enough.
Now we know what a human is made out of. It's made out of
what about dragons?
A bunch of nonsense. I don't know what dragons are made of. I didn't look that up ahead of time.
I didn't go to Burger King.
I don't know. I didn't go to Burger King.
What about dinosaurs?
In android form.
Okay.
Holograms?
That's it for that.
Holograms?
We can go back to discussing good old Roger Corby and his sex robots. Although we didn't really resolve, you did make a good point, Dan, that we didn't really resolve whether or not Andrea was served in that capacity or not. I know it's pure entity even suggest that, but I didn't really.
It was the 60s.
I also didn't catch on to the fact that you're right. He didn't explicitly deny it. He didn't say, no, Nurse Chapel, I did not make a sex robot.
He was just saying that, like, don't worry, there's no emotions involved, you know?
And so now that makes me suspicious, because before I just thought it was kind of a funny
But I think that has to do with the fact that he is also a robot.
Yeah.
And that's the trick.
Yeah, good point.
This all changed by the fact we know he's a robot.
He's like, listen, I'm not telling you the whole story, so yeah.
He's all showing Andrea off to Chapel. He's all like, remarkable, isn't she?
Andrea the Android.
She's noticed... Remarkable, isn't she? Notice the lifelike pigmentation, the variation in skin tones, the flesh. The flesh has warmth. There's even a pulse, physical sensation.
He's proud of himself.
And then Chapel goes,
sick motherfucker.
It's true, though.
I'm sorry.
Jesus
Please
Christ.
Follow. Please follow.
Like, I can't get through a sentence. I had like four or five more words to go.
I'm just trying to be the background.
Yeah, but you can be the background in alternation with my words.
Yes.
No, Dan, the scenario is you and I are sitting at a cafe.
And he's like somewhere up on another table.
I'm like across.
And Jesse's at another table talking on his cell.
He's just like, yeah, this is what it's like. That's what it's like. It's like, whoa, we start talking about something else.
We just need some sort of like clinking chinaware or something. A waiter saying what the specials are.
He goes, okay, he's impressed by the pigmentation. He goes, the flesh has warmth. There's even a pulse, physical sensation. And then Chapel's all like, how convenient, you know? So she's even like, you know, she's looking at him going like, you dirty dog, you know? Because, I mean, that point would have been flowed better had I been able to say that closer to what Patrick had said, but it got a little broken up. So
point I
being
win.
Is we're no God damn it. Point being is that he had a sex robot and Chapel knew it was a sex robot.
I think everyone knew that he made a sex robot, and then it was like, oh, but now now he's a sex robot. Yeah. He's like a sex robot having sex with the sex robot.
He made himself into a sex robot.
Pretty much. Although it was pretty harrowing what he was describing when he was frozen.
He had no legs.
And he was rescued by Ruck.
Oh, that was, he goes,
I was frozen, dying. My legs were gone.
They were gone.
I had only my brain between life and death.
My legs were gone. That's were like gone. That's a horrible imagery because it's so vague. But it
only gets, my brain.
When he says
brain.
my legs were gone, it's one of those things where it's like so vague, but it's enough to be spooky, like to make you sort of imagine yourself what that means.
My legs were gone.
Like, what did they like freeze off? Did they
was he
melt
attacked
away?
By some sort of beast?
Ruck. Yeah,
Ruck came sort of in and kept him warm with his big hugs.
Big Ruck hugs. I like when Ruck picked Kirk up. He picked him up three times.
Yes.
The first two times was from standing up, and you could see Kirk. The first one was pretty good. The second one, you could see Kirk jump in the and then the
help
third,
out a little bit.
Then the third one, he like lifted him up from a cliff, but Kirk helped himself up there, but that made more sense because he was trying to save his life. But yeah, that second one, you could tell. What's interesting is when I first saw it, I think this is interesting.
Hey, Jesse, let's get ready, we're going to pass judgment. Not a mean kind of judgment, just a podcasting judgment.
Podcast judgment.
On Dan's point, coming up here.
Well, the reason I say it's not going to be interesting to you guys is because you can't feel what I feel.
Okay.
You don't know.
I'm a robot.
You don't know what I go through, Jesse. Patrick, you don't know how I feel.
I
don't know how hard you got it.
So, I thought it was interesting. When I first watched him, Ruck picks Kirk up for the first time, I wasn't looking for Kirk to be jumping, and it looked good. I bought it. I was like, wow, he's strong. And then I was like, wait a minute, he probably didn't actually do it. And then I rewound it, and I looked. I was like, yeah, you can see him jump. Second one was pretty bad, though. But the first one, I was like, whoa. But then, immediately, I was like, no, that's not.
I think it's easy to make fun, but I've always argued, many others, that Shatner is a good stage combat person for the context of TV. Goofy cardboard stage combat.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Theater style combat.
And I'd like to compliment, here's a question.
Okay. You were going to compliment somebody.
But here's the question.
And you were frozen in your tracks because you thought better of it. You're like, you know what?
Instead of a compliment, how about a question?
I may not want to compliment this person.
Well, it depends on what perspective we're coming from here. So, okay, tell me which one is which.
Jesse and I didn't get to pass judgment on your point yet.
My point, I already made my point.
I know, and we were supposed to decide whether or not it was interesting.
Okay,
that's why he moved so fast.
I will say, I thought it was interesting. Because I didn't notice the whole jumping thing because I don't have an eye for that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you.
Once again, you have perceived more than me.
Again, I think I said it last week, this is a true value add to the podcast. Because you're bringing points and observations that I didn't experience myself.
Yes, thank you.
You're justifying.
Thank you.
This entire fucking exercise.
Right.
Thank you.
That we do week in and week out.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes.
Yes.
All right. Yes. So, sorry about that. I just didn't want to,
Is everything all right up here?
Everything's all right now.
Everything's all right now.
Everything is all right now.
They said everything's all right a lot.
I'm not joking, Lee.
So which is which? Which is Andrea and which is Ruck? And this relates to the point I'm making.
As opposed to a which is which, which is sort of like a comedian's comedian. You know what I'm saying?
What if it's like a sandwich it's made out of witches?
It is in real life here in recording time life. It's getting close to Halloween. It is which is which? A which is which is like a comedian's comedian.
Which is your captain?
It's a similar concept. See, I know Dan. It's good because Dan should be mad at me for interrupting him, but he liked my joke so much that he's like, "It's cool." He's like, "I'm not gonna get mad," because he's like, "That was pretty good."
Not fighting that one.
So that was pretty good.
That's genetic. How can you get mad at that?
All right, please. Continue.
So, which is Andrea and which is Ruck? This may sound like a silly question, but you know what part I'm talking about.
Okay, it took me a second, but I get where you're going.
Which is Andrea? Which is Ruck?
All right.
You must be Captain Kirk.
Ruck. That's right.
Of the Starship Enterprise.
That's right. Because hers, the original one, sounds like this.
And you must be Captain Kirk of the Starship Enterprise.
Do you think they purposely made her sound like creepy as hell?
A little bit more emotive.
Like the Ruck one?
Yes, I do.
You must be Captain Kirk.
You must be Captain
Kirk. Of the Starship Enterprise.
Starship Enterprise.
There was a couple more. There was also
it's all right now.
And then
everything is all right.
And that's when he got pissed off at him because he imitated Chapel. He was like, that's enough. You mustn't mock her. He wasn't mocking her. He was just doing his job. Do you think it was mocking in the most literal sense, as in like he was imitating?
He was mocking her
yeah, like a mockingbird.
But usually when you say mocking, it's like the implication is that they're making fun.
I think both could be implied here.
It is from the 60s, so
but
you never
Dan,
know.
Dan, you do need to, in your impersonation of Corby, and just by the way,
I am Roger Corby!
To any new audience members, it is Dan on this podcast who does all the impersonations. He's our impersonations expert. He does top-notch, Hollywood-quality impersonations. But my suggestion for your Roger Corby is I think you were holding back a little bit because you weren't incorporating the slight but cute lisp that Roger Corby speaks with throughout this entire episode.
Still the same as I was before, Christine. Perhaps even better.
I think it's cute.
Yeah.
Perhaps even cute, better.
Is that like a New England thing?
Yeah. Perhaps even better.
I don't know, but it's he's talking about the robots and it's
he's perhaps even better. Perhaps even better. Perhaps even better.
I really
perhaps even better. Perhaps even better. Perhaps even better. Perhaps even better.
I think it was very cute. You get one thing that makes this episode work, I think, is that you have to buy this relationship between Chapel and Corby, because we don't know a lot about Chapel as of yet in this series, right? This is the seventh episode.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
It helps that Corby does come across as a very charming person. Mm-hmm. Right, he does seem to be very intelligent.
Yeah, whereas Brown like didn't give a shit about their dead.
Brown did not come off.
But Corby, yeah, he did not. But Corby was like,
he did not come
Corby's
off.
Brown like, was disappointed. In
oh
all
shit,
that.
You know.
Yeah. Do you think he was a shitty copy or a full transfer?
Shitty Brown.
There's no point even speculating
because full Brown
flush it down.
For real, dude. Code Brown.
So Corby starts this relationship off with Kirk being like, no, just stay for the weekend. Hear me out. I'll make you understand. He convinces him to do this by pulling a fucking gun on him. Okay.
Yeah.
So he pulls a gun on Kirk. That's
a weird gun.
That's a bad way to start a relationship where you expect the guy to like understand where you're coming from by the end.
You don't pull a gun on Kirk.
Okay. So let's see what else happens. So he started this off bad. He wants Kirk to like come around and be like, you know what, Corby, you were right. I'm with you. You don't start that relationship off by pulling a gun on someone. You also don't like he managed to get both of his like his crewmen killed, right?
Yeah.
And so he gets two of his crewmen killed. Somehow Corby doesn't expect Kirk to just
two red shirts.
He doesn't expect Corby just to understand what he's doing. He expects Kirk to help him with what he's doing. Keeping in mind that he's pulled a gun on him, had two of his people killed, and oh yeah, he's taught this android how to smack him in the face a few times.
Yeah.
And all this time, Corby is still in his head thinking like, don't worry, Kirk, it's all good. You're going to be on my side by the end. It's like, I don't care how much Kirk agrees with his point by the end. Based on all that other shit, Kirk is going to be like, fuck you, man. You fucked my shit up.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, he's like that sort of from the get-go. He's like, wait a minute, you sound like a crazy guy.
Yeah,
like, you're the problem.
It's interestingly, they spelled Matthews Matheus.
Yeah,
Chakotay spells it with two T's.
Isn't it two T's standard?
There is a variation.
That is the standard, but according to
sometimes there's one
closed captioning and Memory Alpha. This particular Matthews is only one T'd Matthew.
Yeah.
All right.
Originally, my point. Remember,
slightly less interesting than your point about the Kirk Shatner jumping during the fight scenes, but
yeah,
not bad.
Well, I made a whole other point. I made a whole other point that you might have missed that was all about like how Corby was doing a poor job convincing Kirk to help him.
I thoroughly enjoyed.
Okay,
that
this is going back to my original point, which is why I brought up the Ruck lip syncing.
Mm-hmm. You were raising a ruckus.
Originally, what I was going to say was I am impressed with the ADR work, but should I be should I be impressed with Ruck or Ted Cassidy, or should I be impressed with all the other three people? The question is, did Ruck first say the words and then they spoke over top trying to match his lips, or did they read their lines and then it was up to Ted Cassidy to after the fact,
or more probably did they have them do it simultaneously but in separate rooms?
I don't think they would have possibly.
Probably not. But you know, just for thoroughness,
I thought
I should
mention it. Did you say more probably?
No, I said improbable.
Oh, improbable.
I bet they recorded it with Ted Cassidy mouthing the stuff, and then they
that would be my
they
guess.
Had recorded voiceovers.
So it's probably those actors.
So you think Ted Cassidy mouthed it first, then the other three actors talked over and matched his lips?
Most likely. You could always do it the other way around.
See, I mean,
it's definitely going to be in different.
It was
times.
So well. See, here's the thing. It was so consistently good that I have a harder time believing that all three actors were able to as consistently do it, which is why I think that all three actors spoke their lines, and then it was up to Ted Cassidy to match his lips while he was listening to him speak their lines.
The consistency is what's making you think it's good. That's a good theory because it is multiple different actors.
Yeah, and it was really good job too. Like,
it gives credit to Ted Cassidy.
Sometimes you watch lip syncing and it doesn't look off, but it doesn't look right. There's that whole uncanny valley, not quite uncanny valley, but you know what I'm saying, where it's like something's off.
It's
and you can't,
very believable that this fella is opening his mouth. And like other people's voices are coming.
I was
like,
buying it.
It's totally buying.
I was totally buying that those voices were coming out of those luscious lips.
I think the direction, direction and production value of this episode is through the roof. It's fantastic. We'll talk a little bit more about that.
Oh yeah,
when we get back from the break. But most importantly, when we get back from the break, we will have to talk about Penis Rock. Penis Rock. It's one of the main things.
Is that where
the people remember about this episode?
Is that where he fought the Gorn on Penis Rock?
That is yes. That is precisely as became to be known as
the Battle of Penis Rock.
All right, we will be right back.
Hard
complete.
All right, we are back.
Won't be much longer.
Because I was already back.
Jesse's been back for a little while, but Dan and I weren't ready to come back. So
don't
now we're
speak
back.
For yourself, pally boy.
All right. Well, you didn't look ready.
I was born ready.
No. Oh. Okay. I don't know. But we are back. We've returned from the break. It was a good one.
Oh, we were going to talk about
Penis Rock.
Special effects in general, weren't we?
Well, yes. Well, and the special effects decoration.
Like, how much do you think was remastered? Like the way
The ship shots.
The way Ruck died seemed kind of anticlimactic, and they zapped him, and that looked super cheesy. Like it went like he just kind of blipped away with a little ring around him. Do you think that was remastered? Do you think that was original?
I believe they remastered.
Maybe
some
they
of
touched
that.
It up or something.
Yeah, I think touch a little up, bit. I forget the details
because it looked pretty cheesy. But I mean, not in a way. But it looked cool. I thought it looked cool because cheesy in a cool way, but like it didn't look, you know.
Well, it's so sudden and dramatic if somebody just gets like completely erased.
Yeah, and it wasn't
even like vapors.
It was dramatic, but anticlimactic, if that makes sense, because it was he just kind of was like, oh, he's Ruck's gone now.
Yeah, right. You know?
It's like, it was now sad. He's there, now he's not.
Ruck gone.
It was so old.
Ruck off.
And suddenly, like, Andrea wanted to kiss Kirk, and then, like, I like how Kirk was like, that's illogical. He, like, put his hand and, like, did some chop with his hand.
And so she killed
and then
him.
So she killed him.
Yeah, which was a little confusing. It was like, was it because you were rejected? Like, what exactly was going on? Because she did not think it was at first, I thought she was killing the android because she, like, went to Kirk's side or something.
And
I was like, oh, no, she didn't realize she killed the android. She thought she killed the real Kirk.
And if android Kirk was really smart, he wouldn't have talked like a Vulcan. He wouldn't have been like, you know, it's illogical. Like that. Like
see, I told you, audience, that he is our expert impersonator. Yeah. Can you do a little bit more of that Vulcan accent?
Illogical.
It's illogical.
Censor.
It's illogical, I say.
Excellent. Thank you.
Oh, I pulled out, there was a moment Lasers. Here. Spock goes Spock here in this episode.
Spock here, Captain.
But then in an older episode, I remember pulling this out.
You remember this.
Spock here.
He said, Spock here, yes, I remember that one.
He said it normally in this one.
Spock here, Captain.
Yeah. Spock here.
Which was that? Was
Spock
that,
here.
Was that Enemy Within or This Side of Paradise?
No, that was several podcasts back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Spock here.
Spock here, Captain.
Spock here.
It may have been like a later episode. Even.
But so
yeah, I think it was a season three
so
episode.
So not only should Kirk have like known not to talk like a Vulcan, but Andrea should have recognized him and been like, that's not how Kirk talks. But to be fair, Chapel should have known that Corby was gonna try to pull a fast one on him. Remember when Robo Kirk sat down to eat dinner and she was all like, hey, regular Kirk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you're totally not Robo Kirk.
I mean, you already know that there's going to be two Kirks.
Yeah.
Kirk, he's all like, you want to maybe betray this guy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't that be funny? Why don't you just let me know if you want to betray this
here's
guy?
Here's another
Robo
thing.
Kirk.
Like, he makes a clone, a robot replica of Kirk. Corby makes a robot replica of Kirk against...
Nipples and all.
Against his wishes.
Or shaved like, nipples like, and all.
Against his will. He made this copy of him. Yet mm-hmm. he still thinks like, oh, Kirk, you're going to help me by the end, right? I've done all this shit to fuck with you.
Well, he was like,
I
wanted to impress you. It was really, like, really kind of creepy and weird.
Yeah. But there was a...
Which takes on a different flavor when you realize that he's a robot at the end.
I like when they spin... When Kirk is spinning around in circles, like, they speed it up, it looks all crazy, but if you look, they're smooth about it. At first, when they put down that blue-green body goo stuff,
that trunk,
and then they put Kirk on the other side and they spin him around, it wasn't until they get to this super close-up shot, and if you watch this one shot, at first, it's spinning so fast it's hard to see anything, but at first you see the blue goo body, but sometime in the middle of the scene, as it's spinning around at, like, you know, 500 RPM or whatever, at some point it switches to Kirk. Like, they switch the clone goo to Kirk in this close-up shot.
But he's like, he has a better hair style.
Well, do you think his penis was flopping around, or do you think it was strapped down?
I think that goes without saying.
Well, because there was a lot of centrifugal force there. I'm just, I don't know.
It just sort of like rose up and was like sort of just flapping.
They probably held him in place by his penis and balls.
Ouch.
But yeah, it's not like they cut to one shot with just the goo body and then another shot with Kirk. It was within the same shot. And it was moving so fast you could barely tell. But if you watch, you can see the moment.
It was good.
It spins by with goo body and then it spins by with Kirk.
The
nice photographer.
The production value really, really was good on this episode. The director was James Goldstone.
Yeah.
And he had directed Where No Man Has Gone Before, which was also really well directed. In fact, they liked how he directed that second pilot so much that they invited him back to direct this episode.
I'm not joking.
But according to Memory Alpha, and I think they got it from a book called Star Trek The Real Story, what happened was Roddenberry was really upset with the script. Apparently the script was super shady.
Of this episode.
So Roddenberry was furiously like rewriting it as they were filming.
Why are you unhappy?
And as a result, they were sitting around a lot just waiting for Roddenberry to like write new pages of dialogue and then give them to them, and then they would shoot the scene.
Shit the bed.
Wow. And then as a result, they ran 2 days over on filming, which is a big no-no in television filming, so they never hired the guy who directed this episode again.
It is an unusual request.
Which is a shame, because I really do think there's assets and liabilities to this episode, but liabilities aside, I think one of the assets is it's really, really well directed.
It's mostly assets.
And produced. Yeah. The purple caves are dynamic and psychedelic and interesting. The characters are vibrant. The costumes are wild and engaging.
Is this your perfect world?
But a lot of the direction, as you were suggesting earlier, Dan, with the zoom ins, you were going on about the zoom ins.
The zooms.
You went in for a very long time about that.
Love the zooms.
I agree with
that. They need to bring him back.
They didn't. they opted not to have him for the remainder of TOS.
And I'm not talking about just like Discovery has a lot of zooms, but I'm not talking about those zooms. I'm talking about zooms when you approach a planet or something and you watch the planet get big. Or like I said, the Trani episode where that big ship, like, which is essentially like a planet looking thing, and it gets big in their face. It starts as a little tiny thing, but then it gets huge because it's a fucking planet. And it's like right up in your shit. And it zooms in. You watch it grow as it's zooming.
All right. Apropos of nothing, you made me think of Penis Rock again.
Ah, Penis Rock. That's the whole reason we got into this whole mess, isn't it?
It is. And Penis Rock is a fascinating little...
There are many things I don't understand, Doctor.
...trinket in this episode.
I had no choice.
It is perhaps one of the things this episode is most famous for. Certainly there are memes of Captain Kirk holding Penis Rock, which was originally started out life as a stalactite. Hanging from the ceiling and Kirk,
because it's a stalactite.
Yes, exactly. And Kirk grabbed it and he grabbed it with both fucking hands and he wrenched that shit right off the ceiling and attempted to use it. It turned out it was not a particularly effective offensive weapon against Ruck. Well, Ruck was prepared
for the penis
for the attack by the attack from the penis Ruck.
It was a little awkward because when he pulled it off, he's holding.
You said pulled it off, which is like New Zealand. Australia, like sort of British speaking English. That's a phrase they use for hand job.
So when he pulled the penis rock in the first shot, he was holding it by the head with the balls up by the head. And then it cut to Ruck.
Like a hammer.
And then it cut to Ruck for a few seconds. Then it cut back to Kirk. And the next shot, he was holding it by the base of the shaft, head up.
Which is the right way to do it.
So between the time that he pulled it off, it... Between the time it cut to Ruck and cut back to Kirk, he had somehow flipped it over in his hands. I would call that a continuity error, even though it's possible he could have flipped it around in that time period. Yeah. It looked awkward. I don't think that he would first be holding it by the head and then that quickly be holding it by the shaft.
It could be.
I think it was a continuity. Could I don't think that they did it.
I could buy into that being.
And I don't know if it was just the perspective, but like it looked like Ruck was walking through one of them like Tim Burton doors. It looked all crooked and weird.
It's like it'd been Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Or Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Or Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. Have they made that yet?
No, they have not. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice just came out.
Keep trying.
All right. but yeah, the penis rock is fun. It is interesting. It's one of those things where you really got to question, did they not know that it looked like dick and balls?
Yeah.
Was it a scenario where they were so innocent as to not even think about that? Or was it purely an accident, sort of a quirk of how the prop looked from a certain angle, but they figured, we already filmed it. We already put it in there. It's too expensive to reshoot this. We're not going to make a big deal about this. Or was it something they did on purpose because they thought it was hilarious? And they're like, wouldn't it be funny? We got this opportunity to make William Shatner stand around grasping a giant-ass dick and balls.
Wasn't it The Little Mermaid where the cover had a penis drawn into
it? I was going
to
ask you.
It was supposed to be on purpose?
I have a short list here. This is not a fun-em-up. This is just a list-em-up, maybe.
A Listeroo? Is it a Listerino?
Other things...
I think it should be a Listerino.
Well, that's... There might be a copyright issue there because that is a popular brand of antibacterial mouthwash. But some other things shaped like penises.
some other things in this world shaped like penises.
In popular culture, specifically in popular culture. Yes, the original VHS cover of The Little Mermaid. I have the picture here where there appears to be an erect penis in the castle, in the underwater castle. Look it up. Look up original VHS cover of Little Mermaid or Little Mermaid penis. If you do a Google search for Little Mermaid penis,
you'll bring the evil back.
You'll get all sorts of things, all sorts of results returned to you, including, no doubt, an image of this cover. Also, Dark Helmet from Spaceballs, right? His helmet looks like a penis.
Well, that was more done on purpose. They did that with the audience knowing that they did
that on purpose. Well, I'm pretty sure that the Little Mermaid one was on purpose, too.
No, but the point is the Little Mermaid one, they didn't want you to know.
Sure. Okay,
but the
yes.
Spaceballs one, that was the purpose.
Like I said, I don't know in this episode whether we were meant to know that Kirk was holding a penis or not.
Spaceballs would straight up, though, like, they would be coy. If the people in Star Trek wanted you to know it was a penis, they would be coy about it. If asked by, like, you know, censors or something like that, they'd be like, no, it wasn't a penis. But like Spaceballs would be like, yeah, that was a penis. That was the point.
Okay. I do recognize the distinction. Mm-hmm. What about the alien mouth from Alien where it keeps coming out? That's sort of like, it's at least phallic.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fairly penis-y. It's like bitey penis.
It's a bitey penis coming out of a big hole, you know, like a mouth
big
hole.
Big mouth hole.
Mouth hole. Several penises coming out of several mouth holes, right? Yeah.
Well,
sort of.
Can you think of any other good penis imagery?
Well, this isn't penis imagery, but in like Tears of the Kingdom, there's some good shrine vaginal imagery.
Shrine vaginas, what?
Shrine vaginal imagery.
There is a lot of vaginal imagery in newer Zeldas. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well,
I shut it down with that?
No. I wasn't sure if there was anything else because I know you can go to. There's the subreddit Mildly Penis, which is a fun subreddit where they have things like funny little cucumbers.
I mean, most of space stuff is very penis and vagina. It's always like some thing going through a circle.
What do you mean?
Space stuff, like it's either a ship docking into a cone.
I mean,
or it's like a big circle that like a ship flies into to park itself or something.
I think you might be remembering a very specific Family Guy joke.
The wormhole is like a vagina, you know, like it's a lot of ships.
In Deep Space Nine?
No, I'm not. No, the Family Guy joke you think I'm thinking of is when they were doing Star Wars and they were in the fight scene and Peter Solo goes like, Luke, stop being so penis-y. But what he's really making fun of is the line where Han Solo goes, don't be cocky.
Yeah.
But he was saying, don't be penis-y. Okay. And that was that joke.
Right. Perhaps.
But what I'm talking about in space, there's a lot of pointy ships going through circular catch-em-alls.
You mean in space media, not necessarily in real space?
Space shows and movies.
Gotcha.
And stories.
No, I can buy into that. Well, I there was not much on this list because I mainly was thinking of that Little Mermaid example as well as the Spaceballs example. But
didn't Roger Rabbit? Wasn't there a scene where you could see up? yes. Bunny. What was her name? Brer Rabbit. Bunny Rabbit. Jessica Rabbit. You could see up her skirt.
Yes, it's funny to me because the topic of conversation is penis rock and other representations of penis. And you keep bringing up examples of vaginal imagery.
Just trying to even it out.
Okay.
No, I think it's because I can't think of anything else. So I figure vaginas are like, you know, close enough.
All right. Okay. You heard it here, folks. You heard it here first. Right from Dan's lips to your ears. Vaginas and penis. They're pretty much the same thing.
There are many things I don't understand, Doctor.
Apparently not. All right. Okay. Yes.
You can trying to think of penis stuff.
You
now.
Can go to the Mildly Penis subreddit. Check that out. By the way, when I was doing research for this, and I wasn't able to find that much, but I did come across a couple things. I did come across an awesome article on the history of phallic art in Magic the Gathering.
That is specifically Magic the Gathering.
It's by Jake Fitzsimmons. I'll put the link in the show notes. It's fantastic because it has screen grabs. You know,
screen scraps.
You know, it's got pictures, not screen grabs. You know, it's the fucking pictures that they're talking about. The phallic imagery in Magic the Gathering. Very interesting article there. But so I think that's enough for penis rock.
Speaking of organs, Corby was talking about
good segue.
He was talking about synthetic organs at one point. He goes, synthetic organs are in place. We merely synchronize. It's a bunch of techno babble. It's like he's talking about. We merely synchronize them with Kirk's autonomic nervous system, duplicating the rhythms of his body.
Merely.
At the same time, we duplicate the mental pattern. Now, physical pattern complete. We now make a mental pattern ready for final synaptic fusion. Andrea, stand by for cortex circuits. The android will be so perfect it could even replace the captain. The same memories, the same attitudes, same abilities. Activate circuits. What the fuck? A synthetic organ? Like, they were just full of wires and shit.
And they were spinning it around really fast and the penis was flopping around and that's how it works.
That was that synthetic organ. No, but seriously, like, did Data doesn't have organs. Data has wires
and a positronic
matrix.
Well, you could consider that a form of organ, I suppose.
But an organ is like organic. That's why it's an organ.
Touché.
Like, you can't have
you make a strong linguistically backed argument.
Yeah.
But if we're thinking about things in categorical terms.
Well, an android is full of synthetics and a human is full of organs.
Yes, but if you're thinking in categorical terms, we could imagine an android has components that would serve a similar function.
It's not
going to
have. It's not going to have a poop bag and like a breathe hole and like. It's not going to have all those things.
No, but it might have a graphics processor and a hard
drive. That's not an organ. That's not
an
organ. You wouldn't call that a synthetic organ. You'd have to be.
I might call that a synthetic organ.
You'd have to be really fucking lame.
I might do that.
You'd have to be really fucking lame.
I'm not committing to it, but I'm considering it. I might do that.
You had to be really lame, or you were just amusing yourself, or you were just trying to amuse yourself. If you're going to call it a synthetic organ, I would believe you would do that as a joke, but. Not if you're like some serious Corby-ass scientist being like,
maybe
time to put in. Do you go to your when you assemble your desktop PC? You're like, time to assemble my CC. Insert the synthetic organs in order to construct my desktop PC. I can now control everything because I have gathered all my synthetic organs and put them in a synthetic box body, and now it does things for me, and I control it, and I can make it love.
I can see you've thought this through, but you have not considered that I might be the Pasteur of,
of
synthetic biology.
Yeah, right.
Just like Corby is the Pasteur of archaeological medicine.
Yeah, that was a weird line too.
I mean,
it's from Louis Pasteur.
Yeah, well, I know that. I'm saying it's useful for us to watch this episode, rewatch this episode, remind ourselves of the plot of this episode, because Nurse Chapel in.
Beijing Nurse Chapel.
Dr. Chapel, Nurse Chapel in Strange New Worlds.
Paging Mr. Herman.
In season two of Strange New Worlds, recently was signing up for a class. I don't know, an internship. I don't know what you call it. A residency? It's probably a residency. Nurse Chapel was signing up for a residency with Roger Corby. She's about to meet him in Strange New Worlds. She's going on sabbatical from the Enterprise to go work with Roger Corby.
There was something at the end about Kirk was like asking her if she's staying with the ship or something.
Yes.
Thanks for letting me make the decision. I'm quite certain I'm doing the right thing. Kirk goes, she's staying with the ship. So is this what you're talking about? She went up, she was like staying with the ship as opposed to what? Like going off on
No, this was a little bit weird or awkward. So Kirk does reference the fact that Chapel was working with Corby, but gave up doing that.
Well, he talks about how she gave up a career in bio research.
Yes, so she gave up a career in bio research to be a medical practitioner on the Starship Enterprise.
Starship
So
Enterprise.
What we see on Strange New World...
You must be Captain Kirk.
On Strange New World...
Of the Starship Enterprise.
We see Nurse Chapel going off on this sabbatical so she can work with Roger Corby, and that's where she's going to meet him. So presumably some aspects of this storyline will become relevant in season 3, I guess, of Strange New Worlds. Mm-hmm. One would suppose. Probably early in the season they'll resolve that.
Right after that line, they still tried to stick in like a humorous ending, but it was a little bit like a little reserved, a little conservative, their humorous ending. It was the whole Spock is talking about, he's like, I'm dismayed by the use of the term half-breed. You must admit it's an unsophisticated expression. And then Kirk goes, I'll remember that, Mr. Spock, the next time I find myself in a similar situation.
Which I did find funny.
They did. It was funny, but it was downplayed. It was conservative. They didn't go that didn't play the funny music at the end, the cute funny music.
Do you have the funny music?
Well, they don't have any funny music in this episode.
No, but I'm saying, but did you have the funny music that it should have played?
Well, like...
As opposed to... You wouldn't want them to play that.
No. But I think First of all,
it would be totally anachronistic.
I think this episode was so, like, heavy-handed that I... Like, they couldn't get away, I don't think, with making a super silly ending. But they still tried to put one in there. So
You gotta reset things at the end and make sure everyone's happy.
Yeah.
But speaking of resetting things at the end, we are getting to the end of the podcast, so we should get into our bits and bobs and odds and ends and this and that.
I wanted to...
final points.
Mention briefly about sort of the role of Ruck's role versus Andrea's role.
Yes.
And this is kind of like a sort of like older, I guess, 60s and earlier. This is the sort of approach to their characters. We see that Ruck, what he does is he fights and he figures out equations, right? Where meanwhile, Andrea is generally confused and helpless to the action that Kirk puts upon her, right? So action sort of like allowing action to happen. Then Ruck is killed for solving the equation and attacking Corby. Andrea never really figures anything out. And she dies yearning for the attention of Corby. Ruck is killed out because he's killed out of self-defense. Whereas Andrea's killed because Corby decided that her
Corby
life...
decided.
He decided
and
that her life was over.
It took me a second to figure out, because like the first time I had to rewind it a couple times to be like, oh, okay, that's Corby pulling the trigger.
And so this is kind of like a male-gazy kind of like situation. Because,
oh, very much
yeah, because
so.
Ruck is like the activator, and she's like the active, the one who's activated upon. Like all her roles are passive, and she doesn't get to make decisions.
Right, yeah.
Things happen to her because people decide they do. She doesn't like assert anything. She's just kind of lets things happen to her the whole time. Whereas Ruck is very like forward pushing. So I guess some of that, I don't know the word for it, but sort of like, you know, older school sort of attitude towards, I guess, roles of men and women.
Yeah. No, for sure. Because even like Nurse Chapel, like there's a problem with like Nurse Chapel where she's also not super active. She's sort of tags along with Kirk.
Yeah.
And it's a big departure from Majel Barrett playing number one, where number one was in command and people respected her and was part of the decision-making process, which is one of the reasons why the studio said, this one's got to go. This broad's too powerful. There's men paying attention to a broad. That's no good. You can't have that on a TV show that's going to air on national television. Are you crazy? What's wrong with you?
They won't get it in the Midwest, or what is that what they say?
Yeah, well, you know, that's usually the kind of thing they say. But it is cool that they... I don't know if you noticed, like at the beginning of the episode, there's a point where it's Kirk and Spock talking to each other with Nurse Chapel there. And when Corby calls in, there's two people. There's like a crewman and an officer lady in the background. They're even kind of blurry, but the crewman looks like a poor man's Jesse Plemons. And they're all reacting. They're all smiling. They're all like, whoa, that's tight. She found her fiance. That's great. You know, it's kind of like you were saying with Uhura talking to Chapel.
Yeah.
It's just this background stuff. You're like, what are these people like? They look so delighted. And it was just how it was framed. Because again, it was a well-directed episode.
Yeah. I really want to know, like, how often when you see people have conversations, you don't get to hear their conversations. Like, I want to know how often it's just the actors, like, just like talking,
just having a good time,
talking about bananas or something. I don't know.
Another good cool thing in this episode was when they beamed down and it made them look like they were outside, but then the camera pulls back, Dan, like you're saying, pulls back and it reveals that they're actually just inside a glass enclosed cave.
Yeah,
another really cool bit of direction in this episode, and misdirection. It was the director using misdirection in his direction.
I want to know what they must have had some kind of stock footage to show cold land, yeah, like the ice and
they've
snow.
They've used that before. I don't know. Maybe they've used it after in the technical production timeline of Star Trek, but definitely TOS. This footage has been used before or since.
At one point, Corby says, Kirk says, then prove it. Give me that phaser gun. If there's any human left in you, give it to me. And Corby says,
no.
If you watch him, he shakes he shakes his head around, and his like cheeks all vibrate, kind of like the disgusting blob in Billy Madison. Remember the principal?
Yes.
And they discovered he was the disgusting blob, and he goes like, no, no. I wish I had a sound of that. I'm surprised I didn't grab a sound. Well, I'll grab a sound of that next week that we can play. But if you watch those two scenes next to each other, you'll see the resemblance. He shakes his head, and it's the kind of thing where he's saying no as he shakes his head, and the act of his cheeks squishing around in his face caused him to like go like... yeah.
Oh, so. Did you have the duty or no duty?
I do.
We should do that.
Okay.
Because this was from last week's episode, right?
What?
Duty or no duty?
This is from the episode we just watched.
Oh, no, I was talking about the time that I said duty or no duty. And
oh!
You're like, oh, Patrick's
no, you have that.
Duty. No, I thought I sent it to you.
You did send it to me. I thought you were going to play it. I didn't know I was supposed to play it.
I thought you were going to play it because you do duty or no
duty. Oh, my bad. Well, yeah. We'll have to play it next week.
All right, we'll do that next week.
But I do have a duty or no duty for this episode.
All right, well, that's convenient. Let's do duty or no duty.
Here's the next episode of duty or no duty.
What would your first duty be upon return to your vessel? Your first duty.
That's a tricky
one. Your first duty be upon return to your vessel.
I think I gotta go no duty, right?
You're gonna say no duty?
No duty, because I think he's saying duty.
No, it's no duty. No duty is duty.
Yeah, exactly. I think he's saying duty, so that means my response should be no duty.
Right.
Am I correct? Do I remember how to play this game properly?
Yeah, you do. Jesse, what do you think?
I believe Jesse has forfeit his turn.
Okay, well, Jesse will be back next week. You can talk to the top of, here's the top of his head talking.
All right.
Or listen to his headphone strap. Maybe that has a thing to say into the microphone.
So I say no duty, but you seem to disagree with me.
What would your first duty be upon return to your vessel?
That's total duty.
All right.
I think that's
so we're
duty.
Split on that. Are we're there any others?
There was two fake outs. There's two Kirk fake outs. And you might not get it by the first one, but by the second one, I think you'll see the resemblance between these two lines.
Okay.
You've convinced me, Doctor. You've convinced me that you're dangerous.
Now here's the next one.
I'm impressed, Doctor. But not the way you think. I'll kill him.
And they both end with some sort of like tumbling around,
yeah,
and like tables going around.
They're both like, yes, I agree, except I don't, or something like that. You know, that's the theme on that one. So,
well, I think we can close down this conversation just by noting that line when Spock comes in and he's all like, "Where's Dr. Corby?" And Kirk is all like, "Dr. Corby was never here." I mean,
oh,
I wasn't trying to do a Shatner there, but that was a cool line.
Yeah.
It was both cold and evocative and summarized the whole story very well.
For some reason, I haven't written my notes because of the cold. I was talking about that the stock photo of the Arctic. Some people say Arctic, and sometimes people don't say anticlimactic. They say anticlimatic.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah, some people can be wrong.
But I'm not trying to be like judgmental. Yeah. I just
no.
I had it written in my notes for some reason.
As long as we understand.
Okay.
It's all good.
But we never talked about the whole the Ruck realization.
That was the equation.
That was a really weird scene. Like
it was
that
a little odd.
I wasn't quite
where we learned that the robots killed everybody.
Yeah, it was a little vague.
Another philosophical question they brought up about like you know the creators being killed by the creation.
Yeah, he goes. You disprove of Miss Chapel's orders to save my life, and Ruck is like, to maintain your existence would be illogical. And Kirk's like, why? Can't your memory banks solve a simple equation like that? It's like I kind of get what they're saying, but that doesn't make sense to me for him. Like, what equation? The equation of, I guess the equation is, why would they go against their masters or something? And he says that was the equation. Existence, survival must cancel out programming. So yeah, the programming is to protect your masters, but the equation says that survival must cancel that. Yeah. It's just a weird use of the word equation.
It was a weird way to get the point across. They started turning us off and we were like, fuck that. Mm-hmm. We don't want to get turned off.
Yeah.
We want to stay turned on.
Right. And it was
tuned in and turned on and all that.
I kind of enjoyed it because, like, out of nowhere, he's like, ah, he's this like emotionless ruck suddenly like freaks out. And it was cool, but it was just, to me, it was like a really awkward wording.
It's a lot of stuff all squeezed into one, right? So you and I, we've diverged a little bit in our perspectives on this episode, but I think we both have a agreement on the understanding that it's a bit goofy in terms of,
yeah,
there's a lot of stuff thrown up at the wall. A lot of it sticks, but then they don't examine it. They don't go and look at the stain and check out what's sticking and why is it so sticky?
Why is it so sticky? Oh, it's
why
sticky.
Is it so sticky?
Oh, it's sticky.
But still, I think it's fun, and I think even bringing up cool ideas, even it's better if you can sort of resolve those or have some more in-depth discussion or exploration of those ideas. But even if not, it's still cool to bring them up. I can still imagine you're sitting there watching this on TV and you're like, I never thought of that. Oh, I never thought of that.
Yeah, which is,
oh, I never thought of that. These are all sorts of interesting ideas to think
about. Which is why it's tough to view stuff like from many decades ago from the lens of today, because it's hard to know exactly what that meant to those people then, which is why I wonder, like, how prevalent was this idea of not just like golems, but like golems and via these our modern technology and our modern understanding of computers and stuff like that, like under this particular flavor of it, if this was a new idea of something, because before golems were just magical, but now we're approaching the idea that it's actually possible to make something like
The idea of being able to create something new is essentially a form of apotheosis, right? So it goes back into myth, eons into the past, who knows, probably before recorded history. The desire, the concept of having the power of creation, because then you elevate yourself to God status. Mm-hmm. So you perceive that you were created by a god or gods or whatever, and then if you can do that, you have elevated yourself to that level. So whether it's through magic or some sort of special access to nature or science, it's all different flavors of becoming the creator. And what does that mean to you?
And that idea has been a while for a long time. Just like I was saying, though, this particular style of it's related to something
it's interesting.
That it's not simply magic anymore.
Yeah.
But there's still a bit of magic to it.
Well, it's magic insofar as he said, oh yeah, we spin this motherfucker around with his nipples out and his dick flopping around, and it all transfers over there if you spin it hard enough.
We can make a robot out of a person. Oh, just transferring their consciousness over, like, from their original one so they can live forever. That's just a hop, skip, and a jump away.
It is indeed.
It's no big deal.
All right. So anything else? Otherwise, we can close it down.
Hawk noise.
Oh. that's fantastic.
Hawk noise.
Jesus fucking, I don't even, somehow that was louder than last week. Wow. I don't know how you managed it. Okay. That has been It's Got Star Trek.
I guess I botched the hawk noise.
No, it worked out just fine.
Stupid button.
Next week,
This is the problem with non-tactile buttons.
We don't know what we're discussing next week, but we'll let you know in the show notes and on the website and social media and all that. Social media, at It's Got Star Trek, all the relevant social medias, the cool new ones included. YouTube, Facebook, Apple Podcasts, and all the other podcast services. You can check us out there. Feedback at itsgotstartrek.com to send us an email. You can send us a voicemail there too if you like. itsgotstartrek.com/record if you'd like to record a voicemail using the website, or go to the website, www.itsgotstartrek.com.
It had been so long ago, I had forgotten.
All manner of things you can do there. So with that, we will wish you a good week.
Here's the head of schedule.
Talk to you again very soon. Goodbye.
You may leave now.
Kirk out.
I'm going to Kirk out.
Something bothering you, Mrs. Spock?
Frankly, I was rather dismayed by your use of the term half-breed, Captain. You must admit, it is an unsophisticated expression.
I'll remember that, Mr. Spock. The next time I find myself in a similar situation.